this stadium just a decade ago. Big-time players. And it's Joey McGuire who has brought the Red Raiders to the top of the mountain.
Yowza, yowza, yowza. From the student section behind the goal line on Saturdays to the buzzer beaters of the madness in March, welcome to episode 4 of Bowl Games and Brackets. I am Joe, and I am joined by my compadre, Darren. And we are here to take you through the world of college football and basketball, from the rivalries and underdogs to the legendary performances. We will be your guide. From your dorm room to the tailgate, we have you covered each and every week. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And Darren, welcome to episode 4.
Pumped to be here again for episode 4, Big 12, one of those conferences that sometimes gets, you know, a little overlooked for its eliteness. And last year, Texas Tech definitely had some eliteness, but at the same point in time, fizzled out a little bit when they got to the playoffs. So we'll see what happens this year, pal.
I hear you.
So, I mean, listen, we go into the Big 12, right? I mean, this is about as wide open a league as we could get. The ACC seemed kind of clear cut up top. This, you could have a bunch of teams that we could get into the top four, top six. We're going to pick our original top six, but we're going to cover a little bit on everybody. This way we all know every team in this conference, and we're going to get them inside and out, Joe.
All right. Do you want to start? You're going to start with who are you going to start with this week?
I'm starting with the Stormin' Mormons. We're going to Provo, okay? Listen, BYU had a great year last year. They only lost to one team twice, and neither game was that close, unfortunately, for BYU. But this team played great all year. They might have got robbed. They might have deserved the playoff bid last year. Very easy to say they did deserve one. We will find out how good they are this year. I think the roster might even be a little bit better. And the reason why is because these guys are a little bit more mature. It all starts at, well, start with Coach Kalani Sitake, who did a great job. He's back. He's ready to go. He likes what he's got here. But now he's got his quarterback. Bear Backmeyer is back. Any quarterback named Bear that runs people over, who doesn't love that? Guy's physical. He can throw it. He can run it. Dual threat all around. He's just scratching the surface. Problem with Bear last year was pedestrian for three quarters, magical in the fourth. If he can do it all the way through the game, we're going to see what we get from this kid. He might take it up a notch. Got running back L.J. Martin back, 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns last year. Big-time player. Two huge tight end transfers from two Big Ten schools. They used to be Pac-12 schools, but what do we know? Walker Lyons from USC. Roger Saliapaga, Oregon, both on board now. O-line is very good and returns three starters, and they add Paki Fanau, who's the left tackle from Washington. His name says left tackle. You just put him out there and you put him on an island. They're going to be good. This team is going to be solid. Inexperienced at receiver. That's going to be one of the question marks. They got the Oregon transfer, Kyler Casper. He has to emerge. He has to be the guy. And no reason to think he cannot be. The defense only gave up 19 points a game last year, Joe. But this defense was good. And it should stay that way. The linebackers are loaded. They return their group with Glasgow and Essera, and they add Cade Uluave. I can say easy for me to say. I always screw it up. Cade Uluave, who had 100 tackles for Cal last year, so he's real good. They need help with the pass rush a little bit, but the defensive tackles are solid and strong. Secondary is good. This team has a lot of what it takes to get there. And the other thing it does have is it has that marquee game. They play the Catholics. They play Notre Dame in October. They're going to have an opportunity in Provo to win that game and to give themselves that marquee win that no other Big 12 team will have. That could be a win if they get it that gives them an opportunity to get in that large, even if they run into a buzzsaw from another one of these teams that could be climbing up here in the Big 12, Joe. But I think that there's a lot of things to like about this team. They did many things right. They dominated fourth quarters, like I said. Outscored their opponents 131-68. They controlled time of possession, 33 minutes a game. 90% of the time in the red zone they scored. Their opponents only scored 70% of the time. They just have to be more consistent throughout the entire game. If the offense can click four quarters, this team can do things. Backmeyer's back. He's a year older. He's a year better. I think BYU is the team to beat in this conference. Joe, I think you like a team on the other side of the state. Not other side, but another city, we'll call it.
I think so. I like the Utes of Utah, the Utes. And you know what? The biggest loss that they suffered was losing their coach for 21-plus years, Kyle Whittingham. He went off to Michigan, and with him he took his edge John Henry Daly and his 11 and a half sacks to Michigan. But they've replaced him at the head coach with Morgan Scaly, a Utah lifer and the defensive coordinator. And he has Kevin McGivern as the new offensive coordinator. And what they have is a 1-2 punch in the backfield with quarterback Devin Dampier and running back Wayshawn Parker, who combined for over 1,800 rushing yards and 16 TDs last year. Also, Dampier threw for 2,500 yards, 24 TDs, and a 64% completion percentage. So Utah's got that backfield intact. They have two wide receivers that came in as transfers, one from San Jose State, Kyrie Shawls, and the second from Utah State, Braden Pagan. They did lose tight end J.J. Buchanan to Michigan, but then they have two new offensive linemen. One is a transfer from the Ohio State, and that's Isaiah Kemmer, and the second is a 6'5", 300-pound, five-star prospect, Kelvin Obat. So they have a new offensive line, so there's going to be a little bit of work there, but they're returning a quarterback and a running back combination that was key for them last season. Now on the defense, they promoted Colton Swan to defensive coordinator. And like I said, they lost their edge in leading sack man John Henry Daly, but they revived their pass rush from within. They have Cash Dillon and Lance Holtzclaw that combined for five sacks last year. They're bringing in a freshman, Fadahame Siale, to be on that defensive line. And they brought a defensive tackle in from San Jose State, Jairaya Mo. And from Tennessee, they brought in Jamal Wallace. I know it's not my the words, the names are terrible for me. On the secondary, they lost Smith Snowden to Michigan, but they brought in South Florida transfer James Chenault, and they returned their safety Jackson Benny, who had led the team with four interceptions. So I think Utah's got good groundwork for this season. Scaly's just – he's been in the program before, so he knows what is going on there in Utah. So he should be able to handle stepping into Whittingham's shoes. They do have some big games, though. They avoid Texas Tech this year, but on October 24th, they have Houston, and November 7th, they got BYU. They are playing 5 of 7 at home to start the season, so they might get off to a good start. But those two games – are going to be key, especially if BYU, like you said, gets a win over Notre Dame and then Utah takes out BYU. That would help them immensely in the eyes of the committee.
Understood. When we look at the Big 12, Joe, you got to – they figure all roads run through Lubbock, all right? Texas Tech is the defending champ. They're back. The CEO, Joey McGuire, is back. Self-appointed CEO. He just delegates everything out all over the place. His team made the playoff a year ago, lost to Oregon 23-0 in a game where they just looked like they were a little bit outmatched. Interesting offseason for this squad. They made the run at Brendan Sorsby. Sorsby then gets in trouble for gambling at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They stand behind him for a week, act like they're all in. Then all of a sudden, they act like they're not all in. Sorsby declares for the draft. The NFL turns their back on Sorsby. Now Sorsby just sitting out. And what ends up happening with Texas Tech is they go back to sophomore Will Hammond, who played some last year. Baron Morton was good last year, very steady quarterback. Will Hammond gives them a little bit more of a dynamic where he's able to run and throw. Now it's going to be what he's able to do, because this is the big change on this team, okay? This kid's solid. This kid played really well, almost came back in the Arizona State game, the one game that they lost during the regular season. They were down 20. They were down big. They cut it to 4. Had a chance. They actually took the lead, gave up the lead, had a chance to get it back and couldn't do it. But, you know, this is a good squad. You know, there's some things that have to be done here. The O-line needs to be better. They gave up too many sacks last year, so the O-line's got to be a little bit more consistent. But the running backs are great. Cameron Dickey Jr. is back. He led the way. Jacoby Williams backing him up, also solid. They just have to run the ball a little bit more, and I think they will this year. Receiving court returns their number three guy, Coy Eakin. They also welcome Kenny Johnson from Pitt, Dante Lee from Liberty, and Malcolm Simmons from Auburn. All these names sound great. All these players have good highlight reels. Now let's see if they can get into the Texas Tech offense. The defense, can it repeat, Joe? Number one in the nation versus the run, number three scoring in the nation, and total defense as well. Well, the defensive line had all four guys drafted. That doesn't happen at Ohio State and Michigan or Alabama and Georgia, but it happened in Lubbock, okay? So now they have to replace and reload. They're bringing Trey White, who was an absolute beast at San Diego State. He's there to kind of, you know, set the tone. They bring in Adam Trick from Northern Illinois. Not exactly the hotbed, but this guy had a great year, and it looks like he could be a player. They're bringing Bryce Butler to play nose tackle from Washington. He's immense. And Mateen Ibaraboga, I apologize, he's back as a defensive tackle. So they have enough guys. The back seven is almost running it back. The back six is really there. They miss out. They lose out on super linebacker Jacob Rodriguez, who got drafted also, and he was all over the field last year. But this team is stacked, okay? Ben Roberts, John Curry anchor the linebackers. Bryce Pollock and Brendan Jordan lead the secondary. You know, they're good back there. I mean, you're replacing David Bailey, who's a star, and Rodriguez that we talked about. But you know what? They got a lot of talent. Texas Tech also has a lot of schedule on their side, okay? When you look at Texas Tech, they don't really have a ton of rough road games. Week two, they go – you don't know early on in Corvallis. You don't know how fired up they're going to be with the new Pac-12, but that could be a tough game. But they go to Colorado, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, and Baylor. That's their road games in conference, okay? And the home games, I mean, they're going to have to play Arizona State. They're going to have to play Houston. They're going to have to play Arizona. They're going to have to play West Virginia and TCU, but they get them all at home. So the schedule really lines up nicely based on the way we see the Big 12 turning out, where they should have a pretty good chance to have a really good record. It's going to be how quickly Hammond adapts to being the full-time guy, Joe. That's really what's going to happen over in Lubbock. But I know there's another squad that you like a little bit as well, my friend.
Yes, and they're in Texas as well. It's a big state, and we got the Houston Cougars, Willie Fritz. And in year two, Willie got him to a 10-win season, and now in year three, they continue on. And he's still – with offensive coordinator Slade Nagel, they got Connor Wegman coming back. Wegman threw 65% completion, 2,700-plus yards, 25 touchdowns, 9 INTs. But not only that, he ran the ball, 700 yards and 11 TDs on the ground. So Connor's a dual threat. Houston's moving the ball up and down the field. Now, they brought in Oregon transfer Makai Hughes, who was great for Willie Fritz and Slade Nagel at Tulane, but he last year with Oregon was nowhere to be found. So maybe going back with his offensive coordinator and coach that he had back at Tulane, that's going to open him up again. They also have returning wide receiver Amare Thomas, 67 receptions, 966 yards, 12 touchdowns. And they brought in Oregon State wide receiver Trent Walker, who over the last 2 years, 150 catches for 1,700-plus yards. They did lose their leading rusher, Dean Connors, to the pros, but bringing in Makai Hughes should offset that. Offensively, it looks like they're going to be in good shape. On the defensive side, the secondary does return Will James, who had three INTs, and safeties Kentrell Webb and Jordan Allen. They have a transfer in Javion White from Tulane and the Stephen F. Austin transfer, an FCS All-American in Jalen Mayo. They brought in linebacker Jaden Yates from Ole Miss to make up for the loss of Corey Platt, who they lost to the aforementioned Texas Tech, but they need Brandon Mack to step up on the edge. He's had 11 sacks over the last 2 years. It's time for him to step up and take into that role as a leader on the defense. Now for Houston, they got last year, they lost three games. Scarily enough, they lost to Texas Tech, TCU, and West Virginia. And all those games were at home. Can't be losing home conference games no matter who you're playing. Those are important games. Well, this year, they avoid BYU. They're going to Texas Tech on September 19th, which looks like it's going to be a big game for both schools. And then on the 24th, they have Utah. Other than that, on the road, they're going to Georgia Southern, K-State, Colorado, and West Virginia. And then they have Baylor, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, and UCF at home. So if they can get by this this game against Texas Tech on the 19th, and, you know, it'll be a showdown with Utah at the end, but Houston has a good chance to contend for that division championship.
I'm sticking in Texas, by the way. Morning Toads. We're talking the Purple Boys. We're talking TCU, the pride of Fort Worth. People forget Sonny Dykes had this team in the championship game 3 years ago. They got blown out in that game by Georgia. But you know what? He got them there. No one expected him to do it with the young quarterback from Council Bluffs, Iowa, leading the way. But now they come back here, and it's going to be a complete change for Sonny on the offensive side of the ball. Out with the old, in with the new. Josh Hoover, the quarterback last couple of years, he heads to Indiana to be Kurt Cignetti's next QB up. We're going to find out if he's got what it takes there. Kendall Briles, the offensive coordinator, he heads to South Carolina to work with Lenoris Jenkins. So what does, Sonny do? He goes out to UConn, that offensive juggernaut, and goes out and get Gordon Samis. And as much as I may joke about it, but here's the thing. UConn averaged 35 points a game, and they don't turn the ball over. And that was TCU's nemesis last year. Hoover is a gunslinger. He throws it around the yard. What they're going to do instead is try to become a little bit more of a balanced attack, a little bit more with the run, a little less with the pass. And that pass starts off with the great Jaden Craig coming in from Harvard, okay? Harvard transfer quarterback. So you know he's smart. He's big. He's strong. He can sling it. Now we got to see if he can run the offense against the Big 12 competition. So step up for him. So we got to see what happens. Running back room is strong. The only thing is they don't get the ball a lot. Jeremy Payne averaged 5.7 yards per carry. You never even heard of him unless you follow TCU real closely in the Big 12. Landon Denman comes in from that powerhouse Colorado School of Mines, but everybody seems to think this kid's got what it takes to be part of this this rotation. They have a stable to run the ball. Wide receiver Jordan Dwyer and Ed Small return, and Jeremy Scott comes in from Bama. So they have weapons. O-line switches from big and pass protecting to big and run mauling. Let's see if they can do that. I think that they can. Defensively, this team returns a lot of guys up front. The problem is that the guys that return up front were not getting sacks last year. So they need to get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback. Hopefully with a year experience and the addition of Western Kentucky transfer Caron Hayward, they're going to be able to do that. That would be really cool. Secondary's got some veterans, including, Jamel Johnson, he's a first or second round pick next year. He's that good. He's that big time of safety. Vernon Glover returns a cornerback. Central Michigan's Kalen Carroll comes in. This is a strong secondary. If they can get pressure on the quarterback, these guys can do what they can do. The defensive tackles return. They're big space eaters. They're going to be fine. Linebackers, they lose two studs, but Max Carroll's ready to be promoted. And then Michael Short comes in from Vatek to take over the middle. This team just needs to make it all click because you're changing philosophy. But what we do know is, that he's gotten there. He's gotten to the championship. Did it with Max Duggan 3 years ago, the kid from Council Bluffs we were talking about, right? Sonny Dykes has won before. Now he just has to find a way to get the team to gel in the right direction. If they do, he knows how to win these close games and these big games. And for them, to be honest with you, the key is going to be early because they play North Carolina before anybody else plays. They play the first game of the season. And then they get Grambling and Arkansas State, and they go to UCF. If they can beat North Carolina, which technically is a home game, but it's a neutral game, Grambling, Arkansas State, then they go to UCF. They got a shot being 4-0 going into a home game against BYU. That's going to be a huge game in September for these Horned Frog team. They also have to go to Arizona. They have to go to Texas Tech to end the season. They go to Baylor, which is a big rivalry for them. But, they have the opportunity. They get, they get Utah at home. They get Kansas State at home. Kansas at home. West Virginia at home. They have a chance to have a good season. But I'm telling you, Joe, the Big 12 is so wide open that it's so hard to see. This team could finish third. This team could finish ninth. We're going to find out what happens with the Horny Toads from Fort Worth. Joe, one last squad for you before we start going into a little convo.
Well, I have to say, this is another team that could be in that category. They could finish fourth, fifth, sixth, all the way down to ninth or tenth, and that's the Arizona State Sun Devils, Kenny Dillingham's team. Now, this year, they're going to have a rebuilt offense. They lost Sam Leavitt to LSU, and they brought in from that hotbed of quarterback country, Kentucky, Cutter Bowley. He did complete 66% of his passes for 2,000 yards, but he threw 15 touchdowns and 12 picks for the Wildcats. Not exactly what they were hoping to bring in, but it's the best they could do right now. It's going to be a tough to replace and step into Leavitt's shoes. They also lost their lead running back, Relique Brown, to Texas, and they have return of the running back, Kyson Brown, from injury, and then they brought in Marquise Gillis from Delaware State, who ran for over 1,000 yards last year. Wide receivers, they have a transfer. They brought two new wide receivers in, one from Colorado, Amarian Miller, and one from BC, and Reed Harris, who should help significantly on the offense. On the offensive line, they brought in center Tana Alalupa Tupolo. That's easy for me to say.
You love these names, Joe.
Yeah, I know. Who was from Georgia Tech, but he anchored one of the leading offenses last year rushing the ball. So he should be a good lead for them. So the rushing attack, that could help stabilize their offensive line. On the defensive side, they lost their top three pass rushers declared for the draft, and with that, they took 18 sacks with them. They do return Clayton Smith, who had 4 sacks. They have a nose tackle, All-American CJ Fight. They brought in a transfer in the secondary, Ashton Stamps. And they also have Michigan State transfers, Jalen Thompson. And from Baylor, Amarian Winston. So they're trying to build back that defensive line. Right now, it looks like it might be a little bit of a deeper team, but their schedule is brutal. Although they avoid Utah, on the road, on the 12th, they're at Texas A&M. Then the 17th of October at Texas Tech. 2 weeks later at BYU, and then 2 weeks after that at UCF. There's a lot of tough games on here for this schedule. At the home games, Oklahoma State, Colorado, K-State, Hawaii, Baylor, and they're playing Kansas in that hotbed London. So it'll be an interesting season for them, but they could finish like TCU anywhere from 5 all the way down to 9 or 10.
Joe, so we sat there. This is what we call the top tier right now. And yeah, there's a bunch of teams we're going to talk about that could get into that top tier. Yep. A bunch of these teams that we talked about just now could fall out of the top tier. Why do you like Utah so much? What is it about Utah that makes you think that they're the team?
Well, you know, I have to say, with Utah, I think it's a little bit stability. They have a new coach, but it's really an old guy. He's been there for a long time. So he's a lifer for Utah. So that brings a little bit of stability to the team. Returning their quarterback and their running back, two key pieces. You know, when you return your quarterback who is decent and they're running, these guys ran the ball, both of them last year, and he threw the ball to Dampier. That gives them a lot. Yes, they lost a couple of guys, but then they brought in these transfers. So I think Utah's going to be stable there. I think Utah's going to get that defense rolling. I mean, Scaly came from the defensive side, so the promotion of Colton Swan is going to help as well. I think that, you know, they have a solid group there. I think Utah was poised last year. I think their schedule favors them a little bit. They do have BYU at home, and they have Houston at home, and then they go into Tech. They know Texas Tech. So there's a lot of things that are falling their way. So I think Utah really has a shot to get to that Big 12 championship game.
Gotcha. Now,
do you really think – so out of Texas Tech and BYU, who do you think Utah would be facing?
I actually think it's BYU. And the reason why I think Texas Tech comes off a little bit of a hangover after getting embarrassed in that playoff game. They couldn't muster any offense against Oregon. It's a good team. Don't get me wrong. I mean – you know, facing one of the Big Ten's best, don't get me wrong. But I think they're coming off that. And then they have the offseason, you know, turmoil, so to speak. Yeah. You have Hammond, then you tell Hammond he's not the guy. You go out and sign Sorsby, then you have to go back to Hammond. Now, it's going to be determined by this team, the kind of mettle they have, if they're able to overcome the controversy of the offseason and just come out and play football, because the schedule is very favorable for Tech in this game, out of these two teams, I should say.
Yeah.
But what BYU brings is opportunity. I mean, you got Notre Dame coming in to Provo on the 17th. I mean, that's as big a game a Big 12 team in this generation of Big 12 is going to host in a long time. But no Texas, no Oklahoma, the new Big 12.
How much is BYU paying Notre Dame?
I honestly have no idea.
I should look it up.
I should look that up. But you know what? That's a huge game. And I think that BYU, just because I thought they were a year ahead of schedule last year with the freshman quarterback going as far as they did, I think that they have a shot to increase on it. The running back, Martin's back. And you know what? A lot of the defense returns. And I think that this team, on paper, Texas Tech's the better team to me. But with the trajectory of the two teams, I think BYU is a little bit more of a team on the rise right now. I think there's more question marks about the psyche of Texas Tech than the psyche of BYU at this moment.
Well, interesting enough, looked it up. Nobody's paying anybody because they agreed to a two-gamer. So BYU is going to return the favor and go to Notre Dame Stadium next year. So
I figured that it had to be something like that, but you know, I didn't know that for sure. But that's interesting. So when we sit there, we talked about Arizona last. Arizona State last. I'm sorry. Do you think Arizona State's a lock for the top six, or do you think that's a team that could fall off?
Honestly, in my three bold predictions at the end, it's going to be Arizona State's going to fall off.
Okay.
I think their schedule is just brutal, brutal. To go have all those road games, it's just like one after another. You know, at Texas A&M, then at Texas Tech, at BYU, at UCF, at Arizona. I mean, they're giving them five road games. They may lose all five. So no. I think Dillingham, even though he's got a team that's on par with, you know, talented and as deep as he's had, I think the schedule is what's going to kill them. I think the schedule in Arizona State's going to kill them.
Yes, and, I mean, some of these teams just get a little bit of the unlucky draw sometimes.
You know, we were talking about this with the ACC. We talked about this with the other conferences as well. It's the schedule because not everybody is playing everybody. It's this unbalanced schedule that some teams are going to get all the luck one year and other teams aren't. And that's going to play out. And I think that'll be next. You know, I don't want to get too deep into it, but when coaches start thinking about the transfer portal, they're going to start looking at their schedules as well and be like, well, this is a year where we don't think we can contend anyway, so why spend a lot of money? Let's gear up, you know, and let's look at the cycle. 2028 might be a year for us where the schedule is going to favor us, where we're better off trying to load up.
I wonder, Joe, and this is a conversation we'll get into as the season goes on more, but I do feel as though that these coaches should be trying to go out there and signing team players to 2 and 3 year contracts rather than just 1 year in the transfer portal and trying to make sure you lock guys up. And I don't know what the legality of this is, but I feel like that's the only way that, hey, they got to get control of it because it's out of control. I mean, you know, you sit there and you look at certain teams, they bring up as many as 40 guys back. But the other thing you notice is that, you know, these guys are all there for a year. You see a quarterback play in four different systems in four different years now, and it's a little treacherous. And as a fan, and like, listen, we live in the Northeast, so college football is not a hotbed where we are. So we root for teams that are not in our area. We want to watch big-time college football. The closest team is Army, which is not big-time college football. And then the next closest team is Rutgers, who's Big Ten football, but we'd have to drive 2 hours to watch a game or an hour and a half. So there's no hotbed here. But, you know, it's something that has to be fixed with college football and college basketball, Joe.
No, definitely. And I think that there's going to have to be some ruling in place because every year it's going to be, you know, okay, everybody's going to be a free agent. And they don't allow that in any of the four major sports. Also, it's the truth be told is the development of the NFL quarterback. Because, you know, we saw, and this is Jet fans talking, but we've seen what's happened, you know, when a quarterback comes in and has four different offensive coordinators in 4 years, he's never going to develop. And then he goes off to Seattle and he wins a Super Bowl. So, you know, that's one of the things. We're trying to not too many quarterbacks are coming out of college that are NFL ready. You know,
you're right.
And that's part of the problem. You know, it's scary, but, you know, there are guys, you know, everybody's just taking a shot, but nobody really knows. I mean, people are pinning their hopes right now on Arch Manning that he's good because, and it's only because of his last name. That's it.
The one thing to remember, and everybody's sitting there talking about Arch Manning and Dante Moore and all these other quarterbacks, Lars Sellers and all that stuff. And we're going to get to the rest of the Big 12 in a second, I promise you. But last year, did anybody in the preseason say, you know, I think Fernando Mendoza is going to be the number one pick in the draft and going to be the Heisman Trophy winner? Nobody did. Nobody knows. None of us know right now. None of us know who's going to click. None of us know. It could be Dan Pierre for all we know. None of us know Who's going to be the guy? It could be French in this conference. It could be, you know, it could be Noah Fifita could have a huge year, and all of a sudden people are looking at him. There's a bunch of quarterbacks that are solid, and we're not going to know until we see the system and where they come out of, because nobody had Mendoza as the top player coming out of the draft. Everyone thought he was a solid gunslinger at Cal. No one thought he was the number one pick in the draft.
No. And real quick, Diego Pavia. Nobody knew where the heck he came from. He came out of nowhere. You know, he's slinging the ball up and down the field. Everybody was all over him. Now, obviously, he latched on. He'll be in the NFL, but probably not. You know, he's I don't think he's going to be a starter right away, but he's going to be a backup somewhere, or maybe almost like a Taysom Hill for a team where he's going to be all over the place. But
Find me a quarterback that's small in stature with an attitude problem that made it, and I'd love to hear about it because I've never seen it happen.
I hear you. Johnny Manziel. Nobody's – he fell off the face of the earth.
He's just anyway. I mean, you can name a lot of guys that had come in that are a little bit with a bit of an attitude problem that just don't really find a way to make it. They just don't.
No. But I know we're digressing off the Big 12.
Let's go back, and I'm going to go stay in the same state as you as a team that could climb up. Okay. Only reason I don't like this team more is I don't like their schedule at all. But we're going to go to Arizona. We're going to go to Tucson. Okay, Brent Brennan's team, okay? Listen, this is a team that can play. They have Seth Doge's offense. It's big time. It's going to continue to be strong. They throw the ball. They run it up and down. Noah Fifita is back again. Everybody remembers him throwing to Tet McMillan a couple of years ago. He's still there. He's been there forever. He's thrown for 9,000 yards, 72 touchdowns. This will be it for him. But you know what? The kid has wheels. The kid can throw. He can run for that first down. He brings that to the table. They had returned two running backs that contributed last year in Kendrick Riscano, who runs tough, physical inside, 9 touchdowns, and Quincy Craig, who's a bit more speed to the outside. They have an all-around running back transfer from Marshall, Antoine Roberts, and they have depth. They lose Ishmael Mahdi, but they're going to be fine at running back. O-line was not good protecting the passer last year. They must be better, and that includes some transfers like Zach Henning from Washington. That should help them. Wide receiver, they lose their top two receivers, which makes you nervous when you talk about it, but they're going to have to piece together a wide receiver core. They have a bunch of transfers coming in. We're going to find out who's going to be able to do it. The thing with this team is, the defense comes off a very improved season, and it's something to build on. They went from 16 turnovers forced in 24 to 31 last year. They're all over the field, and they need to keep that mentality. They're physical. They're all over the place. Tay Brown's back to lead the linebackers, but he was the second leading tackler on this team. The other of the top seven are all gone. So, again, lots of different guys that are coming in to fill in. The secondary is completely revamped with big-time guys like Dalen Austin from Oregon, Malcolm Herzog from Nebraska, Tyrese Boss from Wyoming, Dwight Booties from Charlotte. Return a lot of talent up front, and they even filled that up with the portal as well. But the thing about this team is simple. They're going to have to find a way to force the turnovers like they did last year. They have to give Fifita time. If they do those two things, establish the run a little bit, they're going to score. They're going to score points. Seth Doge does this all the time, Brett Brennan's offensive coordinator. The problem with this team, at BYU week 2, at Washington State week 4, I know it's not a big deal, but it's still a Pac-12 game, a road game. It's a big game for the Pac-12 team. At Texas Tech, at Kansas State, got to go to Bill Snyder Family Stadium. These things aren't easy. So they don't have an easy road game on the roster. They have Arizona State at home. They have to play Utah and TCU as well. Cincinnati's improved. West Virginia's improved. You know, this is not an easy schedule for them. That's why I think they don't take that step up. But the talent, even though a lot of it is transfer-based, is there. Now we got to see what Arizona can do. Joe, who's another team you think can sneak up the charts here a little bit?
I'm going to go into the Midwest to K-State. The aforementioned Bill Snyder Stadium. So anyway, K-State's got Colin Klein, former quarterback at K-State. He was in the running for the Heisman when he was there. And, you know, K-State has a quarterback in Avery Johnson. No, not that Avery Johnson, but Avery Johnson, the dual-threat quarterback. They also have a running back.
He's never recruited K-State history, by the way, Avery Johnson.
Really?
Yes, he was.
There you go. And running back Joe Jackson, not that Joe Jackson, this Joe Jackson, who ran for 911 yards and 8 TDs. And they also returned their leading wide receiver, Jerron Tibbs, 47 catches, 595 yards, and 3 TDs. They brought in transfers from Missouri, Joshua Manning, and from Hawaii, Brandon White. So the offense is set and ready to go, and Klein will be on top of that, and they should be fine. The problem is the defense, okay? They lost 3 defensive backs to Baylor when they lost their former defensive coordinator, Joe Klanderman. The transfers on the edge, they brought in Wendell Gregory, who's 6'3", 255, and undersized from Kennesaw, Elijah Hill, 6'1", 237. So they had to almost replace their whole entire defense from the year before. So it's going to take a while for their defense to gel. That's why I think K-State is mid to lower end of the Big 12 this year. It's going to take a while. While the offense might be there, the defense is going to struggle. But this is the tough part for them. They're avoiding BYU, Utah, and Texas Tech. So normally you would think, okay, if everything was in place, probably last year, this would have been a great schedule for them. Because at home, they have Houston and Arizona State on October 10th and October 24th. And then on November 14th, they're going to TCU. So actually, K-State, if everything somehow gels by the middle of October, may have a shot, but I think they're still a year away. And like we just spoke about these transfers, if you don't have guys for multiple years, that could be a problem. But this would be a good year for them because their schedule avoids the Big 3.
I got you. Let's see. We'll see what happens with K-State. Another team to look at real quick, West Virginia, okay? Rich Rod is back. He did great things the first time around. He's back again, second stint in Morgantown. Okay, they had some things. Got to get the offense going. They finished 132nd in third down conversions. Got to be a little bit better than that. But they enter Michael Hawkins, transfer from Oklahoma. Sophomore quarterback ready to take over. Reigns of a high-octane offense in Morgantown. They also grab Cam Cook and his 1,659 yards rushing from Jacksonville State. And where did Rich Rod come from? Jacksonville State. So he knows this kid. He's going to give Cam Cook the ball. They're going to run the ball. They're going to throw it quick. They're going to use dual threat quarterback play with Michael Hawkins. The line's going to be better. Still not good, but it's going to be better. They do add Carson Kennedy from UConn to play left tackle. That should solidify things. Receivers are all transfers, but Prince Strachan from USC and DJ Epps from Troy are good players. Defense, the pass rush was good last year, but those guys are all gone. So now they have to make the transfers, have to make it happen. Same at linebacker and secondary where they need to gel quickly. But the names just aren't as big as some other transfers in this conference. So, it's so hard to sit there and pick transfers. It's just that they're not the names and they're not coming from the schools of some of the bigger teams in this league right now. West Virginia's got the talent, though. They have the offensive talent to do it. Schedule's tricky, okay? Week 3, they go to Virginia, at a conference game, rivalry game, but road game. They have to go to Iowa State, which is actually a winnable road game, but they still have TCU on the road, Texas Tech on the road. They have to go to Utah. They also have to play Houston at home and Zona at home. So the schedule's not very favorable, but I think West Virginia's a team that can improve this year. Don't think of them as a contender to get to the top 6 or top 4, really, but I think they're a team that's a contender to be bowling. That's what I see from them. Joe, is there another squad that you like in the Big 12 to touch on?
I think we might have a makings of an Indiana story in Oklahoma State because Eric Morris is coming from North Texas, and he's bringing with him 20-plus transfers. North Texas, they average 45 points per game. They had an awesome offense, and now they're in a Power 4 conference. And with him, he brought quarterback Drew Messmaker, who threw for over 4,400 yards, 34 touchdowns, 9 picks. He brought wide receiver Wyatt Young, 1,200-plus yards, 10 TDs. Running back Caleb Hawkins, 1,400 yards, 25 TDs. He brought his offense, and they're here to sling it and run it. This is Morris's third stop, but he came from North Texas, and it looks like this could be like the old James Madison to Indiana, that maybe it'll be North Texas to OK State. On the defense, they brought in edge Kevion Huddleston and Ethan Weslowski and Colin Lewis. Lewis had two interceptions. Huddleston, 5 sacks, and Weslowski had 113 tackles. They brought in from Florida State, 6'6", 259, edge, James Williams. And from UCLA, linebacker Isaiah Chisholm. OK State might be ready to roll. Last, they've had 2 years where they haven't won a game in the conference. I think that's all about to change. And this year, they avoid BYU and Utah. They now 9-12, they're playing Oregon. I don't know if they're going to be able to compete out of the box with Oregon, but it'll be a good barometer. But October 10th, they got UCF, and on November 14th, they got Texas Tech. In between those games, they do have they're at West Virginia, then they're at Houston, they got Colorado, at Iowa State, at K-State, Texas Tech, at Arizona State, and Kansas. I think the Oklahoma State Cowboys are going to make a run here, and I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. These guys that have played together in North Texas are playing again. He's got them at all three. He's got his triplets, in a sense, with Messmaker, Young, and Hawkins. So we'll see how they do. But I think OK State is on the road to moving up the Big 12 and becoming a powerhouse again.
All right. One last team that I want to touch on for this little middle section here will be Primetime. Primetime. The Colorado Buffaloes, the most talked about 3-9 team in college football. Coach Prime is back, and he has to kind of start over a little bit. But you know what? He gets the recruits. People want to come and play for him. And it all starts with redshirt freshman quarterback Julian Lewis. Took his lumps last year. But if he's going to be successful, he's got to get an offensive line that gave up 38 sacks to help him out. Some of them want Lewis hold the ball a little long. Some of it just they didn't have enough time, and they lose their left tackle. So they have to they're going to have to adjust on that O-line and give Lewis a chance to be the guy that they need him to be. It was a huge recruiting coup when Prime got him last year. Now we got to see this kid do some good things. Starts off with the transfers of getting Bo Yuli in from Georgia to play that left tackle spot. But they just have to perform better all around. Lewis must be more accurate as well, okay? He's got the talent. He just needs him to complete passes. Receiving corps loaded. Danis Cadero comes in from San Jose State. DeAndre Moore from Texas. And returning receiver Joseph Williams. This is a strong trio, right? There's a lot of things to like about what's going on in Colorado. The running game is solid. It's not spectacular, but it's solid. The defense wasn't good, but this is a team where all 11 players are transfers this year. So you want to find out what you don't know? It's the Colorado defense, pal. I mean, listen, some of these guys are studs, right? Gideon Lampron from Bowling Green was a beast at linebacker. So was Leona LaFell from Texas. You know, Boo Carter comes in from Tennessee. Creed Thomas from Notre Dame, Justin Baglin from James Madison. They bring in a lot of guys, and a lot of them have pedigree, right? A lot of these guys were really good. We got to see if these 11 guys can gel. That's what it's going to come down to. So that's it. The thing to know about Colorado, I'm not going player for player with this because we really don't know enough. Lewis has to start showing what he can do at quarterback. The O-line's got to give him a little time to play the game. And we got to see if these 11 new players can all gel together because they don't really have leadership from last year to kind of show them the Buffalo way, so to speak. But I'm going to bet on Coach Prime making this team feisty and fighting for a bowl game this year, Joe.
All right.
Anyone else you like in this part of the conference? Anyone else you like in the middle?
No, I think we're okay.
Okay, so now when we look at the middle, I mean, you know, Oklahoma State's not a team that's shown anything, Joe.
No, but I think
Joe thinks they're going to show something.
I think they are going to show something. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. I think, you know what? The school took the framework, maybe. Maybe that's what they looked at. They looked at a JMU. They looked at what Cignetti did with Indiana and said, you know what? We're going to go to North Texas. They put up a ton of points. Let's bring those guys in. Let's bring them over intact and let's see what they can do, you know, and give them a shot. Hey, nothing was working there, so they got to get something going. So, you know, fire up the engines here and let's see what we can do because you can't go 2 years in a row. You're not winning any games. So anything is better than what they had. So you know,
this is a weird conference, right? Because, yeah, I mean, a lot of these schools, right, are – I mean, you have the original Big Eight schools. You have Kansas and Kansas State and Oklahoma State and Iowa State. You have teams like West Virginia, backyard brawl teams that are kind of from the East Coast, and you put Cincinnati there with them. Then you got the Utahs that were always playing in, like, that smaller conference, Utah, BYU. The Arizonas come in from the pack. It's like it's almost like you put this mishmash of teams together, plus some holdovers from Texas, and UCF out of nowhere, right? And you make this conference, you know, go.
This now is basically the big three conferences. These are all the leftovers.
These are the leftovers, but there's some talent on these leftover squads, and there's some good passion. I mean, Kansas State, that purple stadium can get really loud and really nasty. Texas Tech, they have a good squad. You know, Oklahoma State, you know, this is the land of Barry Sanders. This is a team that's under Mike Gundy was making championship games a few years back. You know, there's Colorado was the talk of college football 2 years ago. You know, with Shador running the show and Travis Hunter and stuff like that. So Rich Rod has won at West Virginia. There's a lot of things to like about these schools. And, you know, it's so hard to know who's going to really kind of gel best because we don't get to watch these teams grow year after year like we used to. And it really makes it harder to judge. That's why a team like an Arizona and a West Virginia and a Kansas State and Oklahoma State can all really merge up and really improve their stature. And a team like TCU maybe doesn't gel and they fall back. Maybe BYU sophomore slump for Bear and he's not as effective. I mean, you know, or an injury, a major injury to somebody on a team. All these things can happen, Joe.
Well, you know, one of the other things as we're going through these conferences each and every week is that almost the reality is that we should, instead of having a power four, there should be eight conferences of eight teams that are the power eight. And they all get one automatic bid. And then maybe it's got to be a 16 bracket or it's got to be a 24 bracket tournament because it's so obvious that that's the only way this thing is going to survive because there's just too many teams in every conference. I mean, we're getting down to there are bottom, but like you said, TCU could go from playing in the national championship 2 years ago to being completely almost to the bottom of the Big 12. And, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy for multiple reasons. One, like you said earlier, this transfer portal allows everybody to be one and done. So you're building for 1 year and then you're spending millions and millions of dollars. And when is that money going to run out?
You're right.
You know, somewhere along the line, if there is a real, you know, the Great Depression part two, that money's going to dry up. And then what are they going to do?
You know, I really don't know, man. You're 100% right.
You know, nobody's thinking about that. Everything is good now because the boosters are all given the money. But eventually, the boosters are going to run short of money unless they're just, you know, printing it in their basement. There's going to be a point where, you know, there's going to be no money. I mean, and I'm not saying that guys should not be paid. I think the student athletes should be paid because at the end of the day, these universities are making more than enough money on these college sports. So I'm not against paying the young men. That's not my thing. My thing is that the money is getting to be a ridiculous number that is going to be, you know, being able to be kept up with.
I think it's got to be capped. I think there has to be a cap. I think there has to be a salary cap. I think there has to be a max salary. I think that all those things have to happen. And it should never be that Jeremiah Smith makes more than Jackson Smith and Jigme who's playing on Sunday. Yeah. And that's where we were at. That's the kind of stuff we're looking at. Desmond Bain from TCU, who's their general manager and basketball player also, obviously NBA player, said that there should be a cap, and I agree with him. I think there's something to be said for it. I think that we have to figure out a way to level the playing field because – here's what happens in college football and in every sport. You know, you're a passionate fan. You root for the laundry. So, you know, whoever's wearing your team jersey, that's what you're rooting for. But it used to be, especially in college sports, that you got to know these kids for 3 or 4 years. And now you don't. And it just loses a little bit of that, I don't know, I guess of that of that pageantry, that comfort level, that you know, that love of your team. Because you have to learn your new team. There's a little excitement saying, oh, we signed this guy in the portal. He's supposed to be great. We signed that guy in the portal. But you don't know. Because if you just follow your team, and not everybody's you and I, Joe, but we're watching every game that we can. Yeah. Some of these guys are just watching their team. And when they're watching their team, they watch their players. But they only see their opponent one time, and that's it. And, you know, they don't get a chance to really experience what these guys can bring. So they might be excited based on something they read from someone like me or you. talking about that we like this kid. But what again, I mean, you know, what does that mean? And how does he fit in with his teammates? Is he a good guy? Does he have the culture down for the program? There's a lot of things, Joe, a lot of things that go into this.
Well, that's why. I mean, we always look at, you know, like the basketball teams, we always look at the Dukes and the Carolinas and their blue bloods and all this. And there was a Carolina way, you know, to do things. Well, that's going to be gone. You know, we just saw this week, and I don't want to get off on basketball, but Seth Trimble left Carolina.
Yep.
And, you know, nobody was expecting that. So it's one of these things where there used to be, you know, gone are the days where you used to have Louis on the sidelines for St. John's and George Thompson, John Thompson, and they were there forever for Georgetown. You know, the other thing is these coaches don't get chances either. How do you build a program if every year you're starting from scratch?
It's not easy to do.
It's not. I mean, Bobby Bowden, we talked about him when we were talking about the ACC, and it's not, you know, Bobby Bowden's Florida State anymore. But Bowden was there for so many years. But could Bobby Bowden coach when every year he had to recruit all 53 guys again and try to make sure? I mean, who knows what they were doing back then, Florida State, if you know. But, you know, the fact that he could get guys for 2, 3, 4 years and you had a plan and a progression. You know, these guys are coming in as freshmen and they're being thrust into starting positions at a James Madison and the next year Indiana. And then the next year they could be in Ohio State, you know. And it's not like they're moving up that way in a program where they're learning from the guys before them. There's going to be no, you know, guys are going to be, you're going to, the beginning of an NFL game is going to be like, yeah, this is, you know, Francisco Mendoza from Cal, Indiana, you know, it's going to be, the guys are going to be giving out four different schools at the end of the day.
Just the way it works. Let's polish off the rest of them, Joe. Give us another one of the squads that you think might be at the bottom, but could be better than people think.
Okay. I think it might be UCF under Scott Frost. They're not playing Utah or Texas Tech this year. They are going to Pitt early in the season. Then they're going to TCU. They'll be at Houston and then BYU. The offense, 26 points per game in the games that they won, 16 points per game in their losses. So they have to do a little bit better job there. They got a new quarterback and a transfer from JMU, and that's Alonzo Barnett III, triple sticks. New running back in Duke Watson from Louisville and Landon Chambers from Central Arkansas, the home of Scottie Pippen. Returning their top wide receiver, Dwayne Thomas, and tight end Dylan Wade. The defense, the secondary returns Antoine Jackson, Jaden Bellamy, Brandon Marshall, not that one, and Damari Henderson. Now, UCF could be poised to go from the bottom third of the conference to the middle third of the conference with a good season. Scott Frost needs to get back to the basics and win here for UCF. I think he'll do a good job. Now, there's got to be somebody else you like at the bottom end.
I mean, Cincinnati's an interesting squad. Again, the whole Brendan Sorsby thing affects them as well because he was there and he transferred out to go to Texas Tech.
Yep.
But Scott Satterfield's improved each of his three seasons in the Queen City, all right? Can he do it in season four? He went from 3 wins to 5 wins to 7 wins. Let's see what he can do this year. All starts with quarterback J.C. French IV. You think you have three triple sticks? I got J.C. French IV from Georgia Southern, okay? He replaces Sorsby, okay? Dual threat quarterback. Offense should move. Offense should be fine. Running back Zion Johnson is a star. They have transfers that'll make the backfield really good. They're going to have a solid backfield. Receivers are even better. Four transfers led by J.V. Gibson and Cade Wolford from Kent State and Oklahoma, respectively. Actually, the other way, Oklahoma and Kent State, respectively. And that should be great. The problem, they have a tendency to get explosive against bad teams and struggle offensively against good teams. So we're going to have to see if they can actually match offensively when they play against a better defensive squad, something that Cincinnati teams have not done the last 3 years, okay? Defensively, this team was on the field too much by design. Satterfield's offense is run, 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 go, 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 go. And then all of a sudden the defense gets held out to dry. They were okay against the run. They were horrible against the pass. It's one of those things. They had 2 interceptions all season. I mean, 2 more than the Jets did in the NFL, but still it's not a lot of interceptions for an entire season. So put it in perspective, French, who was going to be an exciting quarterback for Cincinnati, threw 19 interceptions in the last 2 years. Cincinnati had 2 interceptions on their own side against on defense. So it's going to be if the defense can hold up for this team. Listen, Satterfield has won where he's been. He's improved every year. I don't think he can improve on the wins this year, but I think he can be competitive bowling to get this team moving along. They have to go to Arizona or go to Houston, go to BYU, tough. They also have Utah and Texas Tech at home, Kansas State at home, open with BC, which is that out-of-conference game that they can win. So they could start off here 3-0 here and going into a home game against K-State, and the whole season could turn around for them that way. But we're going to find out what this team brings to the table. Joe, give me another one. Give me another one of those bottom feeders that might be able to jump.
I don't know if they're going to be able to jump unless they jump into the ocean, but they might start off 1-0, and that's the Kansas Jayhawks because they got Long Island the first week, September 4th. But at home, no less. But Kansas, they got questions at quarterback with Cole Ballard. They got questions at running back, and they got three of them, all transfers. Colorado State's Jalen Dupree, Syracuse's Yazeem Willis, and Dylan Edwards from K-State. They remade their defense with transfers from Tulane, Trayvon McAlpine, and Louisville safety Corey Gordon. They've got so many questions in Kansas. So I think Kansas is poised to stay at the bottom of the barrel in the Big 12, at least in football. They got Missouri. They got at Utah in the middle of October. And then they got K-State in the middle of October as well, where they're at K-State. So they're at Utah and K-State. Kansas's other games versus Arizona State in London, like we mentioned earlier, Middle Tennessee State. They go to Utah, go to K-State, host Baylor, at TCU, host UCF, at West Virginia. They may be the Oklahoma State team of the year where they lose all their games in the Big 12. I think they're going to struggle big time in Kansas.
Well, another team that could struggle this year. I mean, listen, let's get into it, okay? Matt Campbell and Rocco Becht are really good for Iowa State, but they left Iowa State. Now they're playing in Happy Valley, right? You know, so enter Jimmy Rogers, who did amazing things at South Dakota State, championship winner. Did a good job at Wazoo last year with all the injuries and all the transfers. But now he heads to Ames to try to rebuild the Cyclone team that Matt Campbell had done a great job with. And he's bringing in Arkansas State quarterback Jalen Rayner to lead the offense. Dual threat, threw for 8,600 yards, ran for another 1,200 in his career in Jonesboro, right? 67 touchdowns. He's a game breaker. But the thing is, this is a very transfer-heavy team. Wide receivers led by Amari Hayes from Tulane and Evan Boyd from Michigan State. The O-line is rebuilt. We're going to see how they come together. The running backs are both transfers with Cameron Petway and Bowling Green and Salahuddin Allah from Oklahoma State. Oregon State, my mistake. On defense, the talent drop-off, okay? We'll see how quickly they can get the defense going. They don't have much. Even the transfers that come in are not of the highest caliber. And then you sit there and you go through the schedule for these guys, and they have to SEMO, they have to go to Iowa. Bowling Green's always a little bit competitive, even though they should win. Then they get Utah, West Virginia at home, but they go to BYU. They go to Arizona. They go to Baylor. They go to UCF. They don't have an easy run for them. Iowa State's always competitive, and nobody wants to go play in Ames. But I think Jimmy Rogers is going to need a year or two to kind of get things going. And I don't think they're going to go winless in conference, but I do think this is a team that is going to probably not be a bowl team this year.
There you go. Well, I got one more for you, the last. And we'll see. The Baylor Bears. Dave Aranda, 6 years, 36-37. The seat is on fire. And I don't think he's going to make it out. He might finish the season, but I don't think he's going to make it out of here. I think this will be the last stop. He did go for a transfer quarterback, DJ Lewagwe. Wide receiver transfers from Oklahoma State, Gavin Freeman, and from Colorado, Draylon Miller. He's returning running back, Dawson Prendergast, and he got a new defensive coordinator from K-State in Joe Klanderman, and he brought in Daniel Cobbs at safety, and he brought a 6'3", 300-pound transfer from Indiana, Hosiah Wheeler. But it could be too little too late here for Baylor. We'll see how he does. DJ Lewagwe, you know, from Florida, he'll give him a chance to win games. But the Baylor Bears have Auburn right out of the gate. Then, okay, the Baylor Bears have Auburn, and they're playing that game in Atlanta. Prairie View, they might win. Louisiana Tech, hopefully. But then they're home to Colorado, at Arizona State, home to TCU, at Kansas, at UCF, home to Iowa State at BYU, home to Texas Tech and at Houston. I don't see Baylor winning more than in conference, maybe one or two games at most, maybe three or four for the season. I don't think that's going to be enough for him to keep his job. I think Baylor's going to be in the market for a new coach at the end of the year.
Understood.
You know,
all right, Joe.
New college football landscape.
Absolutely. So, Joe, we've gone through the Big 12. What are the three things that give me the three things that you think are going to happen in this conference?
Okay. I think, like you said, Dampier is going to have his name in the talk for the Heisman. I think he's going to surprise for Houston. I think Arizona State's going to fall off the most from the top to the bottom, where I think they're just, you know, their schedule is brutal. I don't think they're going to make it. But I do like Oklahoma State to make a run at the top five position. If not, you know, I think they're going to finish top five in the conference this year. I think there's North Texas. I think they got something going there with Kurt Morris, and I think they got a shot in Stillwater to make a run.
All right. Mine are – I think TCU and BYU are going to play in the championship game.
Okay.
I think that's the matchup. I think K-State's going to get to 9 wins and finish in the top 4 in this league. Wow, I think the schedule is beneficial. And I think Prime goes bowling after a 3-9 year. He gets them back up to 6-6, maybe 7-5, and gets his team rolling. I mean, listen, the Big 12, as wide open a league as there can be, I do think that there is a separation from the top 3 or 4 teams. I do think that BYU, Utah, and Texas Tech on paper are a little bit head and shoulders above everybody else. I just think Texas Tech's going to have a little bit of a hangover, and I think Utah, scheduling-wise and getting used to the new head coach, Whittingham had done so many things for these guys. I think that TCU will find a way to sneak in, even though they have a lot of the changes on their own. I'm just banking on less turnovers, making this team a little bit stronger as the season goes on.
All right.
But listen, it's going to be a fun Big 12, Joe. It's going to be a fun Big 12. Any closing comments on the Big 12?
No, I think this out of the four, this could be a very, very competitive from top to bottom. So I think it'll be just as good as the other three that we've covered. So it should be good. We're waiting for kickoff.
And we're going to kick it off with this conference against the ACC. We have TCU in North Carolina. Get to see Belichick again early. Let's see what happens. I'm ready to wrap it up, I guess.
Yeah.
We are bowl games and brackets. That's what we are. We are all about college sports. We want to bring it to you every single week. Nothing but the excitement and the thrill and the pageantry of what college football and college basketball can bring to their fan bases. What we want to do is encourage you to join us on social media, to watch us on YouTube, to ask us questions, to tell us more about your squad. We want this show to be about us, but we want it to really be about you, the listener, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. So in closing, we just say, may your brackets be sharp and you'll keep your bowl dreams alive.